the little tiny daily things that you do every single day to ensure I'm doing the work, I'm constantly growing and evolving and changing and adapting and becoming Alec.
It goes back to an old saying that God hid happiness in the hardest place to find. He originally thought about hiding it on the highest mountain in the world, but understood that man or woman would climb that mountain one day, you know, achieve it, find it, share it with the world, sell it. Thought about the same thing about the deepest depths of the ocean. Understood man would build a machine one day to get there. Mm. So they hid it inside of all of us. Last place anyone wants to look.
Welcome to Rise Above. I'm Kevin Lanning, your host. Today, we're joined by Alec, a true testament to resilience at just 27 years old. Alec's journey is nothing short of miraculous, celebrating 5 years of sobriety and owning 3 successful businesses. Joining me in this captivating conversation is my esteemed co-host, the incredible Kayla Harrison. Together, we'll explore Alec's remarkable journey of overcoming adversity, seizing opportunities, and achieving remarkable success. This is Rise Above, where stories of triumph and inspiration come alive. Let's dive in.
Alec, welcome.
Talk to me.
Welcome to Rise Above.
Yes.
Thank you for having me, guys.
We're finally here. This was like a month in the making.
A month, yeah, about so.
Awesome.
More than probably, I mean, yeah.
For us, it was more than a
month.
Someone had to close a big deal with the USC.
Do some big things. We love that. We love that. Us, yes. Know. Always stay closing.
Yeah. Us small timers, you know.
Not at all. So, Alec, tell me a little bit. I mean, Kevin has a relationship with you, but I don't. So, just for our listeners and for me, you know, tell me a little bit about yourself. What's going on? Where you live where now?
I live in Boynton Beach.
Okay.
Yeah.
This area.
Grew up in Long Island, New York.
Oh, a Long Islander. Okay.
Yeah, of course, until the send-off to college.
Finest.
Good upbringing in Long Island. Parents, the best. Divorced at 12, but definitely for the best.
Mm-hmm.
You know, very, very good at the co-parenting.
Mm.
You know, me and my brother definitely got into some trouble when we were younger, not to the point of where we were.
Is this like a Long Island thing?
I guess so. Not all to the boys. Point of like where we were getting sent away or anything for jail or anything, you know, but definitely getting into the trouble where we could find it. And, you know, we went through our days in middle school, went through our days in high school. We both got sent out to college. I ended up playing volleyball over in Johnson and Wales.
Oh, nice. Okay.
Yeah. And I
so you're
spent,
an athlete.
I was an athlete.
Okay,
I should say
okay.
I'm full dad bod right now. But yeah, I took the college as a good start to kind of getting outside of the life of, living under my parents' roof and it felt good. So, and a point came early on in college where I left.
Mm-hmm.
Never graduated, never even finished a year, honestly.
Mm.
And I went back to my mother's. I saved up a little bit of cash. I moved into Manhattan with my 2 best friends at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And I got into work in merchant cash advances with my brother. He was in the industry a little bit longer.
What's that? Sorry. Don't mean to interrupt the flow. But what's merchant cash? What's that?
I guess a nice way to say it is hard money lending.
Okay.
It's a good industry and a bad industry.
Okay.
It's pretty much when you can't get money from a bank, you go to these people at very predatory interests.
Oh no, you're a shark.
Once was. I am a retired shark.
Okay.
And yeah, after those days, I spent a few years doing that, hit a few more rough patches, moved back with my mother, and she got me down here in Florida to get sober, get outside of myself, you know, humble myself a little bit.
Mm.
My days in growing up in Long Island, you know, I'm just surrounded by the secret life of the rich, you know, and then the same when I got into Manhattan, you know.
Were you wealthy growing up? Did you guys have a lot of money?
Not really. No.
Okay.
I was middle class my entire life.
Yeah.
As my parents have gotten older, they actually have come into more money as me and my brother have gotten out of the house. But growing up, no, we lived in a small apartment in Brooklyn when I was first born. My mother was a social worker working in an adoption agency, and my father was a prosecutor.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah.
Look at them, humble servants of society.
Yes, they are.
I love that.
Yeah, they have been wonderful life teachers.
That's good.
Yeah.
And so how old were you, Kevin, sorry if I'm like taking over here, buddy.
No, you're good. You're going with it.
How old were you when you moved to Manhattan? You said you moved with your buddies?
Yeah, so pretty much, that's 17, then 18 in college, so 18 to 19.
So you're living in Manhattan and you're 19 years old.
Yeah, Lower East Side, Alphabet City.
Holy shit.
Yeah, it was awesome.
What year was that? 2017, 18?
16.
16?
Yeah, 16 was my move-in. Alphabet City, a lot of fun.
Ooh.
Yeah.
What's your best Alphabet City story?
Oh my God, the ones that I could remember. I would have to say I had some friends come out from Cali, and they brought their huge Burmese mountain dog, had to be like 140 pounds, brought him on the airplane as a service animal before it got too blown up. And he was a clothing designer to a very niche market, I should say. It was very hardcore street, LA street brand clothing.
Okay.
And we just go outside one day. We're outside walking with Bruce. We walk out the front door, and out of nowhere, this guy comes running up the street to my friend Tariq, who, RIP, rest in peace, he passed away from an overdose, and saw his clothing. He has two big camera lights in his hands and a huge camera on his back and starts doing an entire photo shoot. Just like that. It was like 9:30 in the morning. We were going to get bacon, egg, and cheeses. And just whole photo shoot on him.
Really?
Yeah, just out of nowhere. And like, that's what you get to experience with millions of people around you in Manhattan.
Yeah.
You get this huge mash of culture.
Yeah.
You know, down here, we still get like a sense of a city life. And, you know, late night, I'm sure you see some weird stuff on the Ave in Delray Beach. But that's the extent to our savageness down here, you know.
Totally. No, New York is a different animal. Like, it's,
oh yeah, it'll eat you alive.
You lived in New York for how long?
12 years.
Yeah,
I was in New York City. You see everything.
Everything.
Every walk of life, like you said, just everyone collides.
Yeah,
and the craziest shit happens.
Definitely expands your life experience.
I can only last
like
12
that.
Days in New York City. Like, I get to day three and I'm like, oh no, I gotta.
Yeah.
I need to hear a rooster crow or something. I'm like, this is out of control.
You sent me a voice note one time when you were walking through Manhattan with your kids, and you're like, oh, like, get out of my way. Like, get over
it
here.
It gives me anxiety.
Kyla, let's go.
You know, it gives
we gotta
me,
get here.
It gives me anxiety. I can't imagine the level of, like, just stress just from where you live.
God.
Like,
yeah.
In a place, like, it's when insane. You live, like, in a place like that, just naturally your level of stress is so much higher probably than someone who lives in Arkansas.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. The motion of life is just so quick.
Yeah.
Yeah. Everything is flying.
Did you feel your stress levels come down once you came down to Delray?
Not at first, because I was
detoxing
so the post-acute withdrawals were not treating me so well.
Yeah.
But once that kind of subsided, it got pretty cool, pretty nice.
Once
the
fog cleared up.
Yeah, everything slowed down a lot. But what I've kind of noticed is a really, really, really close friend of mine has said something that stuck with me for a really long time is if you show me your friends, I'll show you your future.
Mm.
And I've noticed that a lot of my friends are very business oriented, business savvy. So they're just naturally quicker paced people.
Mm.
And to be honest, I just grab the line and I just keep moving with them. So I find that fast paced life down here just as much as I would in Manhattan. You know, I just don't get the.
You find your kind.
Yeah, I don't get the blessings of the restaurants, you know, that come a dime a dozen.
You don't like the restaurants in Delray?
Oh my God. They're all right, but like,
the
it's not like. Yeah,
there.
It's not like going to Per Se or something.
Yeah.
You know?
Don't act like you were born and raised here either.
I mean, no, I wasn't. I was born and raised in Ohio, so this is very fancy for me.
No, I could definitely give Delray some pretty phenomenal shout outs for some restaurants here.
I get what you're saying, though. No, New York is like, it's a smart. You can get anything you want at any time you want,
at
anywhere, any place.
Yeah,
and
three
that
in
goes
the morning.
For food or drugs or like
anything.
Entertainment or totally anything. The world is at your fingertips.
Anxiety.
Yeah,
anxiety,
exactly.
Depression.
Yeah,
joy.
Whatever you want, we got it.
Yeah, exactly.
So you've mentioned a couple times. You've talked a couple times about you came down here for detox. Do you care to before we get to that? That part of your life, I would like to just touch a little bit on how you got to to addiction and sort of the backstory of that.
Yeah, we could go a little dark. So
we go dark to go light.
Yeah, exactly. you gotta break down for a healing process.
Amen.
So at 13, I got into a non-kosher style of business. Because all of my friends around me, you know, had daddy's money, daddy's credit card. They could get whatever they want at any time. And I just did not have that privilege.
Mm.
And to be honest, a major fear in my life is jealousy. And with that, I wanted what they had.
Mm-hmm.
And me being any type of addict mindset, I will do whatever I need to do to get what I want whenever I want it. And at that moment, it was money.
Mm.
It had nothing to do with the drugs. It had nothing to do with the alcohol. Mm-hmm. I had an addiction to having what everyone else had and to get more just to prove myself.
Mm.
And that pretty much took me for a long term of 13 to 22 of this style of business on the side, which, you know, knock on wood, thank God, I've never gotten in trouble for. Mm. I've never faced any type of major losses besides emotionals. But I really learned that, you know, from that, I was the only person that pushed everything away. You know, and throughout that time, that kind of got me to that point of detox was I just pushed everyone out of my life.
Mm.
My mother didn't want me at the home. Mm. She said she would call the police if I came back. Me and my father really didn't have any type of talking relationship. And my brother, my best friend, the person I'd do anything for, he couldn't do it anymore. He told me no, which I get very emotional about now.
Yeah.
My brother is like the person that I look up to more than anything in this universe.
Mm.
And my grandfather being one of them as well, and my father now too. Mm. So not knowing that and me thinking my own ways of thinking that I know better than everyone else, I shoved everyone away and I just continued going down the negative path that I was on, which ended up losing my apartment in Manhattan, me begging my mother to come home. And she let me in. You know, my mother is the sweetest woman in the world. You would never harm a fly.
Mm.
You know, she was like a hippie when she was growing up. She's super fun to hang out with, too.
Yeah.
You know, she's definitely a homie. But she finally let me back into the house and wrecked that in about 4 months.
Mm.
And on my birthday, January 3rd of 2019, my parents were not really big gift givers, but they told me that they got me something this year, and it was a decision that I had to make for myself if I wanted the present or not. So showed up at the house with my friend Matt, and pretty much it was, hey, we have this place to a treatment center in South Florida. You could either get out of our house right now or you could go there.
Wow.
And my whole family has never experienced any type of addiction before, you know, so we were very naive to it.
Yeah.
So I didn't go to detox. I detoxed off of benzos and alcohol in my mother's basement prior to getting on a plane 5 days later to get here in Boca Raton to go to rehab.
Mm. Wow.
Yeah.
I'm laughing because I had a lot of those presents from my parents. Oh, my God.
Yep.
It was a monthly present for me. They're like, oh, you going this month or what? Yep. We got to take you.
Shout out to them. It's a very expensive present. Well, seeing the bills a little bit later. Oh, my God.
Insane. Let me ask you a question. So you said, you know, after 4 months of moving back home and living with your mom, you wrecked it. Was it – did your parent – at that point, did your mom start to detach from you? Because my parents, they let me live at home for like a minute. And then they were just like, you know what? Like, we can't be part of your life anymore.
Mm.
We cannot enable you anymore. You can't come to holidays anymore. Like, my entire family sat me down. Yeah. And that, for me, was like, wait a minute.
These are my people.
Like, yeah.
You're going to just leave your son?
Right.
Mm. Yeah.
And the ones who are very close to you have to do that in order you to realize what you're doing to them.
It's a necessity.
Not only to yourself.
Healing is a process that's mainly done on your own.
Mm.
It's all inside your brain.
Mm.
No one else could get inside there and kind of,
you
know, tweak the nuts and bolts that kind of need to be messed around.
I find, too, that, like, if you have a little bit, you can turn that in your head into a lot. Like, your mom let you move back in. You're like, well, I'm not that bad. It's not that bad.
Yeah.
You know, my parents still love me. They're still here. They're still this. They're still that. I'm not, this isn't really rock bottom.
Yeah, exactly.
So what was, what was your rock bottom? Like, what, how did you get there? What happened? Your parents just were like, when your parents gave you this gift, you said, oh shit, I have a problem? Or, like, how did it happen in your eyes?
To be honest, I'd have to say it was within a month prior, I kind of came to terms with knowing that I had a problem just from, you know, friends kind of hinting at it and me being refusant at it immediately. So I came to terms with it kind of at first. This was like the first time I've ever went to rehab or anything. So my rock bottom, the most important thing in my life, which, again, we need to kind of harp at social media. It very much so is fake. So I may wear expensive things, yes, you know. Yes, I may wear expensive shoes or an expensive belt or an expensive pair of pants. But that doesn't get to the main thing, you know. That doesn't mean that my life is good. You know, my rock bottom, my thing that means something to me, the clothing means nothing, is my family. When I knew, the moment that I knew that I wasn't even allowed in my mother's home again, that was my rock bottom. My family is irreplaceable to me. Again, I grew up well. My parents were very good to me. So I learned the real meaning of family, you know? And with that, that was definitely my hardest loss. You know, I went through financial losses, but at the end of the day, it's refillable. You know, for the people that decide to look at a cup half full or half empty, you got to constantly remind yourself that there's a sink right around the corner and you could refill your glass if you use the tools in your brain.
The pastor at my church always says, this is like one of my favorite quotes. He says, if the problem you have can be solved with money, it's not a real problem.
Exactly.
And I'm like, yeah, that's so true, right? If money can fix it, it's not a problem.
It's an inconvenience or a nuisance. That's all it is. And we catastrophize these things in our brains to be something more than they ever were.
Just but losing your family.
That is definitely not surface level. That was deep and it hurt.
Money can't fix that,
No, it cannot. And that was definitely the hardest lesson I ever had to learn. But I still have them in my life. They've taught me the most important lessons I've ever learned, you know, besides some of the lessons that I had to smack my head against the wall to learn.
We have those.
Yeah, absolutely.
So you hit rock bottom. Your mom says you can't come back here. Here's a present.
You get
from
to,
your father and I, essentially, a very expensive present to go down to rehab.
Yeah.
And you said you detoxed, and 5 days later you came down to Boca.
Yeah.
And tell me about that. I've never been to rehab, so
I mean, the experience was very culture shocking. Prior to, I was only at my mother's house for 4 months, and the friends that I was actually with were in the billionaire lifestyle. You know, the families of Anheuser-Busch InBev and just major, major companies. You know, so I'm on their 160-foot yachts in Battery Park City and their private jets from, you know, Westchester over to Aspen and back to Miami and then back to Westchester. So going from that to me being told I'm only allowed to have $75 a week for food, the first 2 months I'm in a constant state of panic. I don't know what to do besides to use the only means of manipulation that I had, you know, because to be honest, my base is sales. I'm a very good salesman. I could get by anywhere. You put me anywhere in the world, I'll make sure I have money in my pocket enough to feed my family, the friends around me, and make sure that everyone's healthy as well. So with the whole sales thing, I just drew a complete blank.
You said the first, when you were in rehab, the first couple months, you were in a state of panic because you only had $75.
Structured
lifestyle that you were living.
So I had a therapist in there, of course. First therapist, I had to be changed within 3 days because I said some very hurtful words to the first therapist and called the police on him. The second day there, because me being a maniac and my father being a lawyer, I read the bylaws of private institutions in the state of Florida, so I knew what I could and couldn't have.
You were one of those.
So I was one of those, and on my second day, I called the cops, and I, you know, was just causing the havoc where I could. But I get called into my new therapist's office, and
just the money wasn't enough. The $75 wasn't enough. And my background, both of my parents are Jewish. So I told them, which I've never been a day in my life, that I'm kosher. And I was the only person that got an extra $50 a week for food. So wow. I was able to get my $125 a week.
Wow.
The manipulation.
Yeah, the manipulation worked for about 3 months until I get back into my therapist's office. And for some crazy reason, my father, who I haven't spoken to in 2 months, is on speakerphone.
Saying,
is it okay to curse?
Yeah.
Okay, cool.
Fuck yeah, it is.
It.
Why the fuck did you tell your therapist that you're kosher? I've seen you eating bacon a million times.
Dang.
That's what I get.
Right under the bus.
That's what I get
when
I walk
really
in there.
I actually really like your parents, by the way.
Yeah, they're
just
badass.
Like,
yeah, they're pretty chill.
Yeah, they're
super
like,
chill. Yeah, like...
And like, I want to be friends with your mom.
Yes.
I want to be the cool hippie mom.
Yeah. She's awesome. She's awesome.
A present.
Yeah,
a present.
And she's super into art. She's got all the fun stuff. She was always about me having
like,
friends
you
over.
Fucking liar.
Yeah.
You can't lie in therapy.
My dad was the tough one, too, but he was also the easiest to manipulate.
Yeah.
The easiest, because he's just so, he's one to wear his emotions on his sleeve, so I know what he's thinking at all times sometimes. And another time I manipulated, while I was in the same rehab, he came down to visit me after like 4 months, finally, and I talked him into getting me a Juul. I wanted
what?
A vape.
A vape.
I wanted
a
vape.
Okay.
I was done
Mango?
Smoking cigarettes.
Mango Juul?
Yeah, of course,
oh,
of
okay.
course.
Mango.
2019, they weren't fully gone then.
No.
And I talk him into getting me a Juul, which is totally not cool to have in the treatment center. Like, big no-no.
Oh, really?
So I got it for like a week, and... Like, again,
you were
therapist's
like sneaking
office.
Around with the little
yeah, sneaking
vape.
Around. Didn't tell anyone about it.
Where?
I wouldn't tell anyone. Where? I would hide it under my mattress and the zipper because there was like a full cover on the mattress.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd hide it in there. And like, again, father on speakerphone in therapist's office. Why did you tell me it was okay to have a vape? And I was like, yeah, Dad, I did it again. I did it again. And then again, immediately, I just lie right away. It was just natural for me in the past. I was just such a piece of shit. Immediately, you need to hand it over to Sophie, your therapist.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And I was like, I can't do that. I already threw it out. Again, me knowing in the zipper, in my mattress.
Wow.
Even had the tech come with me back to the rooms. To look through the trash because I told him that it was in the trash.
Mm.
And he sifted through the trash. Me standing there knowing it was just in my mattress.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, total asshole.
Wow.
You know what I love about this story? I did all of the same things you did. Cut all of those corners.
Yeah.
I manipulated my first year of sobriety. But I want to say something. Like, that is so common amongst people who are changing their life and getting sober, getting clean.
Oh, yeah.
Going through anything. And, you know, listen, is it strongly encouraged to start doing the right thing from day one? Yes. Can you work a program perfectly? I'm sure one can achieve it.
No, there's but no the, perfect people.
But
no.
The likelihood of it is very slim.
Very
and
slim.
And I think that... I'm not saying it's okay to the viewers, to people listening, to cut those corners, but easy does it. One thing
Absolutely.
At a time.
I think that's
Absolutely.
Such a beautiful, like,
it's so overwhelming.
It's so important to give ourselves grace. We live in this society where it's like,
it is.
Like you said, social media and this idea that, like, you have to do it. I mean, I grew up. As a perfectionist, right? Like, I thought and I lied and manipulated too because I wanted to be perfect in everyone's eyes. So I didn't lie and manipulate because of an addiction. I mean, I did. I lied and manipulated because I was addicted to people loving me and thinking I was perfect and thinking I was a winner and being a star and being a straight A student and being a gold medalist. So I get that. But I think that's so important for us to remember is like grace. For yourself, for others.
100%.
I remember that for others, too, now, because I know we're all flawed, fucked up individuals, literally just doing the best we can. And, dude, kudos to you, because shedding an old skin, shedding old habits, like, growing is hard and uncomfortable. And, like, yeah, you lied about a vape, but, like... You made it.
I made it.
You
exactly.
lied about being kosher.
I get to be
a productive
member of society today.
And you took action when your father called you out. If it were me, I would be like, no, it was a USB stick that I had. I didn't have a vape. What are you talking about?
Yeah.
I didn't have a vape. And I kept lying. You know, so good for you, man. That's amazing.
Yeah.
So how long were you in rehab for?
oh my God, I did like 6 months of PHP. So like in a facility, no cell phone.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. PHP is
partial hospitalization program.
Okay.
And ooh. Then I went from after pretty much 6 months there, which I don't know how my insurance went the entire time, and then continued into an IOP facility for an additional about 3 months with that.
What's IOP?
IOP is intensive outpatient.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Okay. So I would be able to not have to live at a facility.
Right.
But I would have to go to like group meetings once a day or three times a week or whatever it was, wherever you were along your process. Yeah.
And what was like, is it okay if we get really personal?
Go.
Yeah, yeah, for sure.
Okay.
Go ahead.
What was the number one thing that you learned from your time in this intensive, 6 months, that's a long time. And then another 3 months intensive outpatient. Like what was the number one thing that you learned about yourself? And I guess, yeah, how did you utilize that?
So I guess there's two things that I learned, one about self and one about life. I think the most important one was actually the life lesson that I learned. And it goes back to an old saying that God hid happiness in the hardest place to find. He originally thought about hiding it on the highest mountain in the world, but understood that man or woman would climb that mountain one day, you know, achieve it, find it, share it with the world, sell it. And then thought about the same thing about the deepest depths of the ocean, understood man would build a machine one day to get there. So they hid it inside of all of us. Last place anyone wants to look.
Damn.
Well said.
So
ooh, that was good.
Yeah.
I know.
So every
yeah.
Am I allowed to bring my notebook?
Is there a bomb drop noise that I can make?
There you go.
Wait, I think no.
So
Kevin's over here like pushing buttons.
That lesson went very far for me. So I've done a lot of internal searching, which I found a lot of myself, but there is something that I've learned from having money, being poor, is you're always going to have problems. You're always going to have some sort of anxiety. All of these things in your life, they're never going to go away. The problem is just going to change. If it's a financial problem, if it's an emotional problem, again, you're freaking out about $25 because you only got $26 in your bank account, or you're thinking about the $25 million you're getting sued for and you only got $26 million in your bank account.
You're so right, dude.
You know? So with that, don't expect from doing these major, major, major life changes that your world is going to become perfect. Like you said, there's no one that's perfect. Right. So that means there's nothing that's perfect.
Yeah.
So when we kind of come to terms with that, life does become easier.
Yeah.
And I have found a way to allow life to come with ease, which has found my happiness.
One of my mentors, his saying is like every day a new indignity.
Yeah.
Like I was of the same vein. I always thought like, I'll be happy when I'm an Olympic champion. I'll be happy when I'm a millionaire. I'll be happy when I have kids. I'll be happy when I'm married. I'll be, you know, and I just kept thinking like, where the fuck is this happiness? Where is it? Why am I not feeling joy? Yeah. Like, why is it never enough? Never enough. And every day there's a new indignity and a new thing and a new, but you're right. It's within.
Yeah. Money will not create happiness. I believe that there was about a 50-year Harvard study that showed that about an income of $400,000 will create a life with ease, but it will not create a happy life. So once you reach this sort of income in your life, you will be able to have the things that the 99% of the world does not achieve, you know, that million-dollar home, the, you know, maybe the S560 Maybach if you're an older gentleman and like to drive a fancier vehicle, or if you're more sporty and you want to drive an M5 competition, you know? But you get the toys, you get all these gadgets, but you won't get happiness.
Anymore. He's not speaking my language anymore.
Yeah, sorry, sorry.
She is the most humble person.
I love cars. I love cars. Cars is a weakness for me.
Okay.
Big fan of them. Yeah.
All right. I was like, yeah. Roll with it.
Yeah. But
so do you drive a nice car now?
No, not at all, actually. I owe no money on the car. I am, like I said, not to make any Jewish jokes, but my parents are Jewish and they taught me very well how to be frugal. So I bought a car in cash and it's not a cheap car, you know, it's a Cadillac.
Okay.
So it's a good car.
Okay.
But it's I'm planning on buying something new, but it's hard to come to terms with giving up money. I like seeing things go up, not down, you know, and at the end of the day, realistically, where I am in my life, the only appreciating vehicles that I could buy are kind of out of my price range.
Mm.
So everything is at a deficit if I purchase a car right now. Yeah. So
it gets you from point A to point B.
Yeah, exactly. So that's kind of what I just try to remind myself every day, because I just every day keep on looking at new cars to buy.
Oh, come on. You're allowed to dream. You're allowed to have goals. I'm there. That's not a bad thing.
Exactly.
It's
good. Goals are good. Dreams are not achievable.
Amen.
Yes. So I like my goals. I keep them very close to me. But going back to what you originally asked me about what I learned, number one thing I learned on the personal level, I think I learned how scared I was of life. That was probably the best lesson I learned about myself. Mm.
Fear of what, though, in life? Fear of success? Is it fear of failure? Is
Where did
the fear come from?
So I did an inventory in regards to a list of everything in the world that I'm fearful of.
Mm.
And I spent a lot of time working on that. And it taught me a lot of lessons about myself. And I think the major things that I'm scared of is judgment from others on not being successful, not being wanted, not being loved, not being accepted. You know, those are the main ongoing things. And to be honest, the fears that you have in life, they're going to come with fluctuation. You know, they're going to come and go. And it kind of just, you need to kind of learn to adapt with it.
Yeah.
You know, if they're rational or irrational fears, you know, being scared of skydiving is totally rational. Jumping out of a plane is like totally like not cool sometimes.
Have you ever done it?
I have not done it. I would totally do it though. I would do it. I am totally an adrenaline junkie.
Are you?
Yeah. I'll like for my brother's birthday, I actually, we got some cars to bring to a racetrack in Miami.
Oh, that's
so
cool.
We're taking out some pretty
that's
cool cars.
Dope.
And we got a professional racer that's going to be out there
to
drive us around too.
That's cool.
Yeah.
Oh, I love that. Like,
love it.
You were talking about fear, and I think it's important what you just touched on. Like, number one is that we all have fears, right? And they're all going to fluctuate. They're all going to go up and down. But these fears that you have, like, we come from two very different backgrounds, two very different walks of life, but I have those same fears.
Mm. Yeah.
I was always so afraid of not being loved or not being seen or not being or being judged or am I enough?
Exactly.
This was a big thing, you know, like I never felt enough. And it's crazy to me, the more we dive into these interviews, the more I talk to people, the more I grow. Like everybody feels like that.
Oh yeah.
It's fucking wild.
We gotta
remember. How we deal with it
is
just like the difference, you know? And like your addiction is a symptom. It's not the actual problem. My success was the symptom. It wasn't the actual problem. The problem is like this inner, like you said, you found yourself, you figured out where happiness is hidden, and it's in you.
Yeah, it's all internal. And I'm all about the struggle as well. I think that's another lesson that I learned thinking about it a little bit more is that just pain, like not in like a weird way. Like I'm not like that way sex wise at all, to be honest.
I am. No, I'm just kidding.
Totally for you, dude.
Just
like,
kidding.
Listen,
I knew it.
Getting a little rough is cool and everything, but I'm not like one of those sodomists or anything. But like I'm all about like the mental pain. So like I'll sit in like an ice bath for 30 minutes, or I've done these Anipis, which is like a Native American sweat lodge where you're literally like on these grounds.
Do you want to cut to 135 for me?
Oh, yeah. No, not.
I'm going to fly him out.
Not
he
happening.
He can help me sit through a.
I am struggling losing 10 pounds right now. But like the Anipi, I think that was a really good life struggle lesson. Mm. It's these Native American sweat lodges that you just sit in, that these rocks are just burning in fires for like 18 hours before you get in, and you cover these huts with blankets.
How many degrees?
Oh, I couldn't even 190? Tell you, but Asana makes this thing look like a baby.
Yeah.
Asana's, yeah, usually like 105 or
yeah.
something.
Yeah, Asana's nothing compared to this. So you're sitting in this for like an hour. And
mine's 63 degrees Celsius.
And I got to give it, I think women are mentally stronger than us sometimes because they split it. The women are on
they
one
are.
Side and the men are on the other side. And all the, there's like five women and five men. And the five women are just sitting up there totally fine, like this is a breeze. And me, I'm like in a bathing suit. My shirt is off. My face is in the dirt trying to find the cold air. Because, like, I knew I wasn't getting out. I knew I wasn't going to quit.
Oh,
so,
man.
Like, I had to find cold air.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah.
It's funny. The first time I went into a real sauna was in Finland. So
yeah.
My baby mom is Finnish. And
you
the baby
call
mama.
Her that.
My ex-wife is Finnish, and we used to go.
There you go.
She's going to listen to this and be like, what the hell? Like, he's going crazy. He's doing drugs
mama.
Again. No.
Going off
so,
the deep end.
So I'm in Finland.
Take 52.
And everyone goes in co-ed completely naked. All the men are like, all right, American, like, let's go.
Mm-hmm,
let's go into
mm-hmm.
the sauna.
Yeah.
They jack it up. It goes up to, like, 195. They're fucking swinging the blankets around, and they are making it hotter. Then they start hitting each other with, like, the birch trees
are
to
you kidding?
Open up the pores.
Oh, God.
I get out, and now I'm naked, and I'm the only one circumcised in there as well.
Oh, my
so
gosh.
So they're like, oh, the American, he's
American.
Got the cute pee-pee.
Oh, that's
the
so
cute
funny.
Pee-pee. And, yeah.
Is
so,
this, like,
yeah.
with her family? Like,
no,
is this, like,
no,
with, like,
no, no,
people
no.
you knew?
These were, like, the friends' husbands.
Okay, okay,
so it was,
okay,
like,
okay.
the guys, and then, yeah. But, and that's then they go
so
and
funny.
Cut a hole in the lake, and... You know, through the ice and jump
oh,
right
thank
in.
Thank God that you
Savages.
Didn't say the wall.
Insane. No, not the wall.
That's funny. Dude, the first time I went to Europe, I was 13. I went to Estonia. I had a tournament there.
Wow.
And I had to cut. At the time, I was competing at 105 pounds. So I had to cut weight. And I'll never forget, I went into the locker room at the hotel because they had a sauna. And I'm 13 years old, like, you know. Doe-eyed and bushy-tailed, like just this like innocent little thing, and I walk in and there is this old ass man, and he is like so fat and so hairy and so naked.
Oh, God.
And I was like, oh my God, I went into the wrong locker room. And I like run out and I like try to talk to the front desk lady, and she was like, no, together. And
yeah.
I was like,
oh God.
So like I had to go in the sauna and cut weight with a bunch of old ass hairy men, and here I am like 13 years old. Yeah,
it's
yeah.
wild. Our personal space.
Yeah.
As Americans, our personal space, we take it very serious.
They do this in the US as well. Like I was like 12 or 11 years old, and my I guess I think I was with my mother, one of her friends, and like a couple of my friends, and we went to this place in Queens called Spa Castle.
I've been there.
Yeah. And just like, I'm like 11 years old and
Kevin
I see all these like adult naked guys and like they're full grown penises. And I'm like 11 years old
me.
Looking at
yeah,
myself
that's...
and I'm like, oh God. I was like, am I stuck with this thing for the rest of my life?
Oh my
traumatizing.
Yeah. yeah. Saunas are traumatizing.
Yeah. Talk
okay,
about
good.
Long-term
I'm
negative
glad we can
self-talk.
All agree on something. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, that's funny. Shit, what the hell were we talking
so,
about?
Okay. So you're in
Oh, I know
sober
what,
living.
Yes.
Did you want to say something?
No, I did want to say, okay, I just wanted to say really quickly that I love that you like, I'm not going to call it pain,
yeah.
but I think that like chosen suffering is important. It's an important part of life.
Yeah.
Like we're all going to suffer. To live is to suffer, right? We all, I mean, how many times have you heard that growing up? But like the chosen suffering, like I have chosen to fucking get back in a sauna and make 135 pounds.
Exactly.
Like, I love that you have found a way to harness that and turn it into a power. Like, that's such a... it's like, yeah, dude, that's
yeah.
not a lot of people get there. How old are you? He's like...
I just turned 27 a few
days
ago.
He's wise beyond his years.
He is...
Yeah, 27 I just turned.
He is sober, 27. Has his own business...
Yeah, I own
with
three companies.
With a co-founder. Okay, so, all right,
three,
yeah, three companies.
Sorry, three companies.
Yeah, and
are you single? Are you
yeah,
looking for love? All right, ladies.
I just
ladies.
Got out of a relationship, actually, 2 months ago. I've
Ooh,
just deleted.
He's on the market, gals.
Yeah, no dating apps yet, deleted social media, just focusing on
you.
Focusing on work. Yeah.
Okay, what
yeah.
were you going to say, Kevin? I didn't mean to, like, go off on a tangent.
No. So, all right, so... I've done sober living, the structured living,
yeah.
you know, your budget on a daily basis, inpatient, and then, you know, whatever structured living that, you know, you obviously partake in following treatment.
Mm-hmm.
What was life like for you, bridging back to life? Mm. Like, so did you, like how they have, like sober jobs and,
Yeah, you're probably not going to believe my answer.
Well, let's.
Tell me.
You jumped right back in.
That was the happiest moment of my life. Happiest I've ever been my entire life.
Wow.
I had nothing. I had a job making $8.60 flipping burgers on the corner of Swinton, the Ave, in Del Rey over at Docks.
Wow.
Walking to work if it was rain or shine, happiest human being alive.
Why?
Because I stopped caring about what everyone thought.
Oof.
And you were working on yourself. I had the same exact experience. Mm.
I finally felt love from people around me as well. Mm. Like pure, honest love. You know,
you let people back in. You didn't use those coping mechanisms and push everyone away anymore.
I let people in, not back in. I think I'd let people in for the first time in my entire life.
Mm.
I got on prescribed Xanax and Adderall by the age of 12 when my parents were divorced. I was speedballing by then, and I took Xanax prescribed from 12 to the age of 22 years old. So I didn't know what true, real, raw emotion was.
You were you were just like a zombie? Yeah.
I had no idea.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. So you were happy.
The work, man.
I was very happy. I felt pure for the first time.
I love that.
Yeah, that's amazing.
Nice. That makes me so happy.
Yeah. That is amazing.
I get goosebumps sometimes thinking about it,
So, okay. So what enabled you? Yes. All right. Your life, this was the happiest time that in your life that you had experienced. Now, letting someone in, what did that process, like doing the work, like in terms of identification, like, okay, you're working. For me, it just happened and I didn't even really notice it. I looked back and I was like, holy cow, like this is different in my life. Like that relationship is a real relationship in my life. Like, wow, I called my parents without them texting me and telling me that I haven't reached out to them in 2 weeks. You know what I'm saying? Like, or I just reached out to them and I didn't ask them for anything.
Yeah.
When did you realize that the change was starting to happen and you were doing the work?
So I knew, it happened before I noticed it. But it took me a little bit to notice what it was that kind of brought people back to me. And it's definitely attraction based. You stop lying.
Mm.
People will like you. I just naturally stopped lying because, getting off of drugs and teaching me a moral path of life, reiterated my brain processing to say in an easy way.
Mm.
And with that, I just, my natural reaction was not to lie or to deceive or any of negative, malicious intent.
Yeah.
It was all very pure. And
also, like, not giving a fuck, right? Like,
yeah.
I bet that made it easier to stop lying when you finally get to that point where you're just
for
like...
sure. And I think another thing that made me so happy is that big part of my sobriety was helping people, which it was a very selfish thing that I did, though. It was very selfish what I did, because I knew that if I helped people, I would feel better.
Mm.
I would be paid in a currency known as utils, which is the measurement of happiness.
Mm.
So again, I like money. I like numbers. I can then change the thought process to how I can purchase happiness. By helping other people, I just naturally became happier, more honest, more energy.
It's crazy. The void filling actions that you were taking when you were living on Long Island, I did the same thing. The fear, I was riddled with paralyzing fear.
Yeah.
And then
once
I started partaking in self-esteemable acts, i.e. helping other people,
exactly,
all of that started. The anxiety just started to go away, and
exactly.
I stopped giving a shit. I stopped, waking up. Well, look, everyone wakes up with some kind of, that's why they say meditate in the program. But,
yeah,
a majority of that fear was lifted.
Yeah.
So
what do they say? Happiness is the one thing you have to give away to keep. Like, you're not. Yeah, like when you hold on to something, when you're
right.
focused on yourself, when it's I, ego.
Yeah.
I'm not talking about your true self, like what I call the soul or the spirit. I'm talking about, like you said, money, things, material.
Yeah, it does nothing.
Yeah, but when you push all that bullshit aside and you genuinely want to – and it doesn't matter how you start, by the way, in my opinion. I think yeah, if you're helping people because you want to feel better, it doesn't matter. That's how you start, but that's not how it ends.
No,
usually
no.
By the time you're done, you're like, oh, fuck, like, I do feel better, but I can't believe I just did that. Like that.
Yeah, it's great.
Mm-hmm.
It's like sometimes you get the same feeling just on a very minimal scale of like when you complete your laundry. At least mm-hmm. for me, it's like I hate the task, but like once that last piece of clothing is done, it's just like, wow.
Kevin don't do his
I
own
feel
laundry.
Great.
I actually recently, I trained, can you? Oh, sorry. It sounded like something.
You
went
trained
out.
Your dog to do your
I
laundry.
My,
he trained his daughter, probably.
Similar. I trained my 4-year-old daughter to fold
I
my
knew
laundry.
It. I
wow,
knew it.
Loves it.
Oh my god!
I get the basket.
Talk about
I fill
continuing
it up.
Your manipulation.
When are you come to my house and show Emery?
Yeah. I
he
I
needs a male role model like that.
You're doomed with Emery.
Oh my god!
You are doomed. No, but she
he
loves
knows
it.
How to get him dirty. Does yeah. Does she really?
I swear so to cute. God, she gets upset if I fold one piece.
That's incredible.
I don't know how I feel
amazing.
About this.
Oh, you're so lucky.
I don't know how I feel
ROI,
about this.
ROI, return on my investment.
Oh. Yeah, great.
This is amazing.
So I actually...
She cleans the house, too.
What you were making fun of him for, I was actually having people do my laundry for a really long time, and I noticed that I couldn't do that anymore, not for a financial reason, but these things that we slowly kind of take away from our lives will then replace with a habit of laziness. It is easier to attach
Oof.
Onto that.
Oof.
So I didn't Oof. Stop... doing it because of financial. I stopped doing it actually because it creates me to be more prosperous.
Yep.
So do your laundry.
What do they say? Wake up every day and make your bed, right?
Exactly.
Like just
your
these
first
little,
task.
Tiny...
First accomplishment.
Yep.
Yeah.
Oh, man, I love that.
So
sometimes I do my own laundry.
Yeah.
So you have 2019 is when you went into treatment, correct?
Correct. Yeah. Literally right in the beginning, January 8th, I got there.
Okay. So
wait, when was COVID?
2020.
A year after, yeah.
Okay, so you weren't in... Okay.
So you got your first year pretty much out of the way before COVID. So you had a good foundation going into COVID.
Yeah, yeah, very much so. But it was still detrimental for me.
Oh, yeah.
Very tough on the... Yeah. The meetings for me were never the same after.
Mm.
They shut down everything, and... We had nowhere to go, so at a point, there was a men's meeting that I really liked, so I ended up just inviting these people to come to my house, which it did create us to build closer relationships with one another, and it ended up like 40 people showed up at my garage, so
wow.
I found like
that
the
is...
only church in
I
all of
that.
Palm Beach
Wild.
County that accepted us,
I
had
that.
To move all of these people to a church.
Dude, you helped all of those people.
Yeah, but
that's amazing.
The
that
whole,
is amazing.
The whole COVID thing, just the meetings prior to, they were much more a family-oriented feel.
Mm-hmm.
Camaraderie.
Yeah, and afterwards, this was the only meeting that I really had that feeling that of camaraderie, exactly, or of that family-like feel. It was the last
yeah.
one.
Yeah.
And as it adapted, I kind of phased out of that meeting as well, but it is... You know, it's definitely I lost my train of thought again with it.
No, it's
where
okay.
I went with it originally.
We were talking about meetings, and we were probably
oh,
talking
how it was
about
with
like
the COVID. So
after
yeah, so
you've been sober for a year. You just experienced the happiest moment of your existence thus far. You're no longer numbing or coping with negative things.
Yeah, so
you're feeling all of the feels.
Yeah. So before COVID, great, everything going strong. Yeah, it ended up with it. After COVID, it kind of just pushed me away from meetings in general.
Mm.
I stopped going to them for a very long time.
Did you think about using again?
No, not really. It took a really long time, to be honest. Like the first 2 years of it, I had no itch in mind, you know, just very...
God removed that.
Yeah, just straight-minded, very linear path, you know, just did not steer off of it. I knew exactly what I wanted. I had it in my projection, and I knew that it was reachable. So with that constantly on my brain, I had nothing to think about. But as business went on and I learned more struggles and as the finances went up, the problems become a little bit more stressful in other ways. It did come back, and smoke weed, you know, definitely in the sense of calming down, but hard drugs,
no.
I still never had that. Like in the past, I had that feeling of I need the Xanax. Mm. Now it doesn't even occur in my brain anymore.
Mm.
You know, any of that, the itch to party, you know, those nights in Manhattans, I burnt out after 2 years of it. You know,
yeah.
I was not working a job.
Mm.
I was not working any 9-to-5. I never worked a real job besides being a chef at a couple restaurants, which I was great at. I loved to cook. but I never worked a real job until 22 years old. Never graduated college. I had no base of life.
Yeah.
You know, so I just stayed on like a very straight line projection, crammed it all in a couple years, and I learned a lot.
Yeah. So you said during COVID, the meetings kind of fell off.
Yeah.
You created a meeting, which is amazing.
Yeah.
Did your job that you had at that time, so how did you get to this three business, you know,
good
mogul
question
that you are now? What's going on? Yeah.
So, working flipping burgers. My brother came down here to get sober about 8 months after I.
So your brother had an addiction as well?
Yeah. After his roommate overdosed and passed away, we kind of said, you know, it's the end for you as well. It is time for your journey to Florida.
And is he younger or older than you?
3 years older than I.
Okay.
Yeah. And he came down here and he was the guy that introduced me to MCA's Merchant Cash Advances. So we got into another office doing that again for a little bit. COVID hit. Office closed down for a few weeks, and then, you know, with all of these financial problems, everyone started defaulting on their loans. So the industry just was not the tidal wave that it used to be. A lot of these major lenders closed down. So I started working for this guy, Greg, and I got my 215 license for life, health, and annuities, and I started selling life insurance. I brought my brother with me, started working for him as a sales agent as well. My brother went on to the backside for marketing and everything. That's what he thrives at. So we worked for this guy for about a year and a half. And my whole life, I knew that I was meant for more. And I couldn't wait any longer. It was just one of those moments that I knew. So I told this guy, Greg, I'm done working for you. It's either I can own a business with you alongside me, or I'm going to look elsewhere. He said, okay, let me create a couple proposals. He created me a proposal 5 days later for this moving company. I took the moving company, learned a little bit about it over the next week, and I ran into this guy, Josh, in LA Fitness in Delray Beach, and he was the owner of the halfway house that I put my brother through after he got out of treatment. So
wow.
I pitched him on the idea. I had maybe like $1,400 in my bank account, and I owed like $1,300 2 weeks later in rent. And he took the idea. 5 weeks later, we filed for a DOT license, and I've never looked back since.
Dang.
Yeah, after a year of that, we were able to raise enough capital, and we opened up two insurance companies, and we have not looked back since either.
Are you spiritual?
In a weird way, yes.
Like, I mean, that just screams God to me. Like, this timing, these moments, these things, like...
It worked perfect.
Fate, you know, whatever people call it. Wow.
Yeah, 100%. Awesome. And with the whole God aspect, I do believe in a greater power. I do call it God, but... I find still till this day a hard way of making it up properly in my mind.
Mm.
I understand that it is an evolution or a power greater than myself.
Mm.
But with knowing that and knowing that God has a power greater than myself, I latch on to things that are naturally greater than me.
Mm.
So this, for example, three minds will create a podcast to be better than a person that's sitting in a chair alone most of the time.
Mm-hmm.
Because we just have more brain power. We've got more ideas to bounce off of each other. You know, brain processing just works so differently that your ideas will look completely different to someone else's.
Mm-hmm.
So it'll create a nicer storyline and everything. So with all of that, you know, I definitely eye on the side of understanding that the power above us is definitely leading us in the direction we're meant to be in.
Yeah, working for our greater good, yeah.
Yeah.
So other than implementing that power greater than yourself in your everyday life to achieve long-term, you know, abstinence, sobriety, what else do you do in your daily life today that helps keep you on the straight and narrow, that helps you not fall back into – now listen, the fears, they crop up. The resentments,
always,
they crop up for me all the time. If I am not going to meetings, so I did the same thing as you during COVID.
Yeah.
I had a little hiatus from meetings, and then I started to see these areas in my life where I was just acting out, you know, little white lies. You know, a white lie then turns into my boss asking me about an expense charge, and then I'm just flat out lying about it.
Mm-hmm.
And then they start to crop up, and then they create that unmanageability in my head. And then my life becomes, okay,
it's crazier than when I was even using at this point. Yeah. Like, well, what's the fucking point of being sober?
Yeah.
You know? So what do you implement other than a higher power and then the obvious, like some kind of maintenance, you know, going to meetings, self-help groups, whatever it may be. What else do you implement?
I think the most important thing to me is just constantly picking up the phone. I always ask questions about everything in my life. I just constantly admit to myself that I do not know what's going on and I need help to run my life. So
humility.
That is, yeah.
Such a...
But again,
humility.
Again,
humility.
But it's yep. weird though, because you say humility, but again, naturally, I do not project a humble man in that sense. You know, yeah. maybe around my employees or when I'm with my grandmother or when I'm with my parents. But like, I'm a very much so an extrovert. You know, and I, you know, I will have dabble in flashing sometimes, you know, not in the sense of a nude way, but in the sense of like a nice car on Instagram story or
yeah,
something.
Of course.
Yeah. So, oh, that's funny.
So, yeah, honestly, picking up the phone and constantly asking for help. That's like the greatest thing that I could
but it's
ever
a choice.
Do to continue help.
It's a choice. You, yeah. you do both, right? Like
it's the hardest thing sometimes. That phone could feel like it weighs a million tons.
What makes it easier today being humble? Now, I'm not saying you weren't humble when you were Long Island, Alec.
Totally not humble then.
But what
spoiled brat.
Was it because you were enabling yourself to be in a vulnerable position and then you realized, well, maybe it's not that bad to be in a vulnerable position. I can practice humility, because I feel like vulnerability and humility, they stem from one another, right?
Yeah.
Putting yourself in that vulnerable position and then enabling yourself to be humble enough, or vice versa, whatever it may be. But did you feel it for the first time and say, well, it's not that bad and I can continue to do this, or you saw results from it?
I think it was more of a results thing. Consistency yeah. over time equals results. And that's yeah. just kind of something that I had to prove in my own life to come to terms with.
Yeah.
You know? So definitely more on that side.
Yeah. It's funny because when we're vulnerable and when we're humble, those are actually the places of true strength, right?
Yeah.
When you're able to... To me, it's, I mean, I call it like an awakening, you know, like when you got sober, you kind of had an awakening.
Full rebirth.
Maybe it wasn't like all at once and it wasn't yeah. like this big aha moment, like, I don't know, like some monk on a mountain somewhere. But yeah. this is like, and the habits, the little tiny daily things that you do every single day to ensure that, yeah, maybe I'm not awake 24/7. Maybe I'm not constantly like this vessel of purity, but yeah. like I'm blinking.
Yeah.
I'm in it. I'm doing the work. I'm constantly growing and evolving and changing and adapting and becoming yeah. Alec, you know, the best possible version. And I don't even like to say best, because it's like that implies that like yesterday wasn't as good. Like, that's not what I mean, but you're just becoming who you're meant to be, right? Like,
yeah, and every day it's a learning process. I'm nowhere near where I need to be.
Right. None of us are.
And that's also one of my biggest struggles is just every day I ask myself, why aren't I there yet?
Yeah. You struggle with that?
Yeah, 100%. Like, I do. I have family that holds very high expectations, which it's not them that hold the high expectations. It's I hold it for myself because of how far they got in their life.
Mm.
You know, my cousin, world famous actor, does like 26 voiceovers for The Simpsons. My
That's
father.
Cool.
What character?
Mo, Apu, Officer Wiggums,
Mo.
Crazy the Sign, like
Krusty
the Clown.
Can I tell you guys a secret?
Mo, you gotta
watch The Simpsons.
Dude.
Yeah.
I never
You've
have.
Probably seen stuff that he's in. Like, if
I'm
you've
sure
ever seen
I have,
Night at
the
Museum
never...
2, have you seen that movie?
Oh, yeah. We just watched it on the cruise, me yeah. and my kids.
He was the evil guy, Hank Azaria.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
Okay.
So that's like, I see him and I'm like, wow, he's made it. You know? And
so
then,
it goes back to that comparison, that that fear of not being enough.
100%.
Wait, can we go back to your uncle? Wait, he does the Mo? It sounds like this?
Yeah. The bartender.
Does he have like a raspy voice?
Not at all. That's just how he does the voice.
Oh,
so he does. Yeah,
the secret is out.
Yeah.
Mo really doesn't have the groggy, scratchy
No,
voice.
Not at all. He does 26 voiceovers. So
I'm
with
scarred.
The Simpsons, it's like very few actors and actresses that actually do it.
It's
they
just
play
a
lot
of
different roles.
A bunch of different things. That's
yeah.
pretty cool.
Yeah, it's awesome.
I like that.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Okay, back to Alex.
Real business.
Okay, like, we're literally talking about how he feels not enough, and you're like, wait, now let me talk about the uncle
again. It's just like, and then my grandfather is another example. Like, he is like, he has made it further than anyone in my family, in my eyes, not in a financial standing, but like in a he's really made a point in his life. He was the first Jew to run for Attorney General for the United States.
Wow.
He was district attorney, assistant district attorney of Queens. Wow. He was the detective that saved the largest jewel heist in American history from the Museum of Natural History.
I thought he was going to say the largest jewel heist, like mango jewel pods.
No.
Like Russia.
Gems and rubies.
Dude, that's so cool.
Yeah.
That's wild.
Yeah.
Dang, you come from a pretty nifty family. I'm not going to lie to you.
Very much so on my father's side. And then my mother's side, you know, they're very more mellow and
the hippies.
Low key.
My people.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
But, okay. So have you gotten to the point where you realize that like your grandfather accomplishing all of those things, your uncle being this, like, have you gotten to the point where you realize that that is also just another version of shit? Like, things like success isn't external validation. Like, you found happiness within, and all these other, like, of course we want to do good work, we want to be good humans, we want to give back to society, we want to live a good life, but like, I feel like that all the time when I think about, like, I want to be a UFC champion so fucking bad.
Yeah.
Like, that's what I want. I think about it all the time. And I'm like, that's just another fucking thing, Kayla. Like, what is it actually?
So, I've come to terms with it 100%.
I guess I'm asking, do you struggle with it? Because I do.
It pops up. It pops up here and there. I've come to terms with it a lot more because I understand that these fears are completely irrational, because I do not know any mental struggles that these people, or, you know, rest in peace if they've passed away, have gone through. I am fearful of not having what they had on the outside of their life.
Right.
And that's it. I have no idea what the internal part of their life was like. Right. So, like, I need to remind myself, like, hey, the main part of their life, you know, the bread and butter of their life is their everyday, not what is posted.
Right.
You know?
There's no point in even trying to, there's only one you, there's only one me, there's only one Kevin. Nobody knows.
And the quickest way to get to where you want to be if you are really jealous of those things is just focusing on yourself.
Mm.
Quickest route, 100% of the time.
So not last, but we were talking about the small habits, and Kevin was trying to, I think for us, one of the reasons we started this podcast is because we want people to maybe not have a blueprint, but see over time a pattern.
Yeah.
With people who rise above. So you talked a lot about picking up a phone.
Picking up a phone, making sure you're surrounded by the right people. Again, show me your friends, I'll show you your future. Mm. If you got a good group of friends, you're going to have a good future.
Mm-hmm.
Just naturally, we're going to bounce our energies off of each other.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're around negative energy, you're going to have a shitty life. You know.
Let me ask you a question, Alec. Did you have that one friend growing up, and then when you got sober, that one friend that was always the bad influence? Like, you guys were bad together. Like, you were good people.
Oh, yeah.
But, like, when you and that one childhood friend got together, you came up with the sketchiest ideas. And
oh, yeah, absolutely.
And did you keep that friend in your life when you moved into sobriety? Did you change the dynamic of that? Because that's an experience that I've had.
He's probably sitting on my couch at my house with my dog right now.
I love it.
Yeah, he's my best friend from high school. He went through a very, very rough patch with addiction as well. It took about 4 years longer for him to grasp onto it.
Mm.
But he reached out to me and my brother one day for help. We were there immediately. We got him into rehab. He went through a halfway house, and he's living in his first apartment alone for the first time in like 9 years.
Wow.
Did you shove it down his throat, or was it a little more attraction versus promotion when it came to
him? I won't
shove
anything down his throat.
Okay, so that's important, right? You were a role model. You did what you had to do.
100%.
And did the next right thing, and you stayed sober.
Yeah.
And you did what you had to do, and someone noticed it. And how...
You changed his life by just
doing the next... He changed his own life.
Mm.
Yes. That had nothing to do with me.
Yes, but by you staying sober. Now, look, was it solely you? Who knows?
It was 100% attraction thing. So a lot of things about just beating people down, you know, when they're being bad people, like they need to come to their rock bottom on their own.
Yes.
We can't force them there.
Yes.
And honestly, us trying to do that is just creating us to be bad people.
So hard.
So like you said in the beginning, at the end of the day, if he wanted to continue to ruin his life and I saw that, I would just walk away.
Yeah.
That's it.
Have you had to do that with other friends?
Yeah, and those friends are dead. Mm. I have gone to too many funerals down here, from very close friends to, honestly, I only have one roommate left from all of the roommates that I had between my rehab, IOP, and halfway. They're all dead except for one. Mm.
That's wild. The odds of people...
That's scary.
...who get the percentage of people that actually go to a meeting and get sober and achieve 1 year is, I don't know the exact numbers, but it's very slim.
Very slim. It's like 3% or something.
Yeah, it's very low single digits. And someone who achieves 1 year, the fall off is even greater and so on and so forth. And it's so crazy how, you know, fortunate, you know, Kaylee, even, you know, you with your story, it's not a sobriety story. It's a completely different story. It's a recovery story, recovery story, recovery story, right?
Exactly.
Like the odds and how lucky we are to have found recovery, a solution, got the help that we needed is a miracle in itself. So for the three of us to be sitting here and talking about this, like, really makes you grateful.
Yeah, I should be dead or institutionalized
it's
or something.
Me too.
Yeah, I got away scot-free.
Too.
So lucky.
Same.
Yeah, but
I can't believe it.
For the ones that are listening, best thing that you could do if you do have a person that is really, like, terrorizing the ones around them because of addiction, like, the best thing that you could do for yourself is walk away, and it's the best thing that you could do for them as well.
The hardest, but the best.
The hardest thing, for sure, because you continue to be there for them. They are going to reach out to you because they know that they will be able to achieve some sort of support for you. And by you staying there, you're just aiding to their addiction.
Enabling.
Yeah, 100%.
Enabling 101.
This is hard for me to hear. So my sister struggled. So I adopted my niece and nephew. They're my kids now, and my sister... The reason I adopted them is she struggles with addiction. And I think it's so important for family members to hear, because even, God bless my mother, you know, the hardest thing to do is to say, I'm not going to watch you kill yourself anymore.
Yeah.
Like, you think we all have this illusion of control, right? Like, if I just do this, if I just help her this time, if I, like, you think you have some kind of control over what happens in her life. Mm-hmm. And I spent so much time wrestling with that idea that, like, I could save her. Like, I'm God, you know, like, I have that kind
such
of power.
Such a painful idea.
Ugh, yeah. It's hard to walk away from. I still have that illusion in my own life and with my kids. I don't know if you have kids, but I struggle. Not yet.
Yeah, not yet.
But I struggle.
I should say that, right.
I struggle with that idea of, like, I can save them. I can heal them. I can.
Mm-hmm.
But it's like what you did with your friend, right? You be a role model. You show them the way.
It's the best thing that we could do is just example setting. Mm-hmm. And with the whole, you know, walking away situation, a thing that really helped me remember to do that for the ones that were in that type of position in life was that the hardest decisions to make are hard for a reason, because success will not come easy. If that's in happiness, if that's financial, if that's image, whatever it is, you know, those hard decisions that you have to make, like waking up at 5 a.m. to go to the gym or to make the decision if you're going to take a financial risk or not, you know, they're tough decisions for a reason. And that's where you're going to find your greatest success. The easy decisions of being there and coddling and, you know, trying to control, you know, it is just going to deteriorate the whole situation that much more, you know?
We grow at the edges of our comfort zones.
Yes, most definitely.
So your advice to loved ones, family, friends of someone who is struggling and going through something is detaching.
Yeah, the
and
greatest gift my parents ever gave me was
detaching,
not talking to me then.
No longer enabling. Now, what would be your one piece of advice to someone struggling from
addiction? Yeah, to 19-year-old Alec.
19-year-old Alec struggling from addiction, alcoholism, what would be one piece of advice that you would tell them right now?
Like in the middle of active addiction.
In the middle of active addiction.
Yeah, like, and they're listening to this podcast. Not at rock bottom, but like, yeah.
Honestly, it's going to sound fucked up, but I'm going to tell them to find the fastest way to rock bottom as possible because that's their answer for happiness.
Mm.
They need to hit the ground hard and fast.
Yeah.
That's what I did. I'm so grateful for it. You know, I just hit it really hard. And I'm never going to put myself in that position again. You know, like there are nights that I still will tear up thinking about those nights that I was detoxing, sweating, puking on my mother's basement floor, you know?
Yep.
So, yeah, just whatever you're doing, just do it a little bit harder so you could hit the ground real fucking hard. And again,
it's sad, but
it's fucked up to say. Yeah. It's fucked up to say because of the amount of overdoses that are going on right now. Yeah. And I am not God, so I do not have the answer to solutions to people's lives, but that's what worked for me, and I've seen it work for a lot of other people.
Yeah, and I want to just really quick, to the viewer, if you're listening to this, that does not mean, and I'm being very serious about this, this does not mean if you're an opiate user, for example, use more opiates.
Correct.
That does not mean that. That doesn't mean drink more. That doesn't mean any of that.
Maybe just look in the mirror.
Yeah, look in the mirror.
Look in the mirror and get your road to recovery started as soon as possible.
Yeah.
Because you make the decision at the end of the day, and you're not alone.
Yeah. And you also need to remember that it's okay to have a problem.
Yes.
Like if someone tells you you have a problem.
I love that.
That's huge.
If someone tells you you have a problem, you probably have a problem.
Yeah.
If it's on a scale from 1 to 10, if it's at 1 or at 10, I can't tell you, but a problem's a problem.
Okay.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It is perfectly okay. I am a fucked up human being.
Yep.
My mind works in mysterious ways that some people just can't comprehend.
Yep.
And it is okay that I am weird and that I have a lot of problems in my life.
Yep.
You know, but when you come to terms with that
again.
Exactly. Mm. Happiness is going to come in heavy waves when you come to that point. Mm.
I mean, look at us. We're just so cool and we're so fucked up.
So
it's kind of cool to be fucked up.
Yeah.
You know? It's like
so
it's
cool.
Thing.
I'm going home to watch a movie with my dog tonight.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah, that's my coolness. That's my evening.
Oh, man. I think that's beautiful, though. Like, yeah, it's okay to not be okay.
Exactly.
Yep.
That's the best thing about it.
Because
realistically, there are just such few moments that you are really just okay.
Dude, I can think of like two in my life, maybe ever.
Unless
and it was like the 1 second I was on top of a Olympic podium and I was like, oh my God, I'm okay.
I'm okay.
I'm not okay.
Yeah, exactly. Unless you're like one of those people that are okay with just leaving your life as is with like 60 grand and going to Bali for the next 10 years. Like, I feel like those people are always okay.
Yeah,
but besides that, like, I'm never okay.
Yeah.
There are a lot of them in Florida, by the way.
Oh, yeah.
A lot of them.
Yeah.
Where are they?
In West Palm.
Yeah, West Palm area, wherever
I knew I should have moved.
You follow like Financial Kappas or party centers, and like that's where you're gonna find them.
Dude, she stayed in a treehouse for a weekend in West Palm Beach. She just
What do you mean,
babysitter? You gotta
watch
the kids.
No, I needed a momcation. So backstory: I'm a single mom.
Okay, you made this sound like way weirder. Like she walked into some random person's backyard and
sat
in their treehouse for a fucking week.
No,
I literally. So I fought in November.
Okay.
I had a procedure like 2 days after my fight. Then I went on a cruise with my kids and taught judo for a week. We stayed in the same bed. Then we came home for a week. Then we drove to Ohio, me and my two kids in the car, 16 hours straight.
Wow.
Had Christmas with my lovely but sometimes toxic family for a week straight. Then drove back from Ohio, 16 hours straight with two kids, two cats, and my mom. And I was like, holy shit, like I need silence.
Yeah.
Mom, can I go sleep in a treehouse for a week?
That's so funny. So what was it like, an Airbnb?
Yeah, dude, I just like, I was going to go stay at a hotel on the beach and I just was like, let me look at Airbnb just for shits and giggles. And there was this really cool treehouse and I was like, this is where I'm going.
Yeah.
It was like 30 minutes from my house. I rented a truck because I was like, I want a truck, and
great.
I just like did what I wanted to do. I brought my little paint by numbers. And
Wait, what kind of truck did you rent?
I don't know. They just had like a Ram or something.
Oh.
I have just like been thinking about a truck, kind of a little bit.
Yeah.
So I rented a truck.
Well, and you know who to ask. I'm the car
guy.
Well,
now I know. Yeah, now I know. Alec, I'm going to be like, what do you think of this?
Exactly.
What's the best truck?
Yeah.
Wait, what is it? If you need to move, insurance.
Oh, if you need health insurance, life insurance, or you need to move your house or a car.
Yeah, now's the time to plug any of your sponsors or businesses.
No,
seriously. If you need to move, if you need, what, a car? If you need insurance.
What are your businesses called? Do they?
Alec.
So my moving company right now is called Vanguard Moving Services, which we are changing names soon. But besides that, I run, really operate my two insurance companies under one business name, which is Stoic Insurance Group.
Stoic.
What we specialize in is actually providing free health care out of Obamacare to people.
Okay.
So we don't even take credit cards. We don't take payment. We don't do anything. Mm. We just make sure that people that are able to qualify for free Obamacare, that they have it and that they are properly signed up through their healthcare.gov profile.
That.
Make sure that they're directed in a proper fashion. And
I have one of those.
Yeah, it's a great it's a great business model. It's a great wave. I think that it's really good for the people that just, because these people that do make this type of income, realistically, they just, their awareness is just so low for something like that. And it's not like they're doing it intentionally, you know, and they're not penalizing themselves in an intentional way to hurt themselves for it. They just don't know.
Yeah, you don't know what you don't know.
Exactly.
Which I don't know a whole lot.
How do you create that awareness? Do you serve ads, digital ads, to let people know that what they qualify for?
Really good question. I am not the leads guy. My brother is totally the leads guy.
Okay.
So all of that, I would totally have to base it off of his answers. But it is mainly generated off of online marketing.
Cool. Okay. So you're going to get Obamacare perks through your company, essentially. And
no, not even perks. You get the full insurance. If it's Blue Cross,
okay,
Blue Shield, United, you know, whatever
apologies.
It is.
Okay, I thought it was things that you qualify if you have.
No.
Okay, got it.
Yeah, no.
Just
like,
people that don't even have insurance.
Yeah, like we are making
it.
Sure that
people
qualify for free healthcare that don't have it, that they're on it.
That's awesome.
Badass.
And then moving just household goods, that's mainly what I focus on, people moving from home to home, interstate.
That's bad.
Well, listeners, if you need a mover and you hire him, it's going to be guaranteed that he'll be sober when he's moving your shit.
There you
so.
I'm actually not going to be moving your shit. I pay people to do that. I am like way
right,
too fat
be drunk.
To do that
no,
right
I'm just
now.
I'm kidding.
No, but they are really good people. The movers are great
amazing.
Guys. Yeah. Really, really good people.
I love that.
Yeah, I've had great success in the industry. Good people around it. But it is a brutal industry to be in, to be honest. If there are definitely the horror stories of this industry are true. I am on the broker aspect of things, but we have found a clean way to go about it in a sense. Of course, there are going to be those gray areas in businesses anywhere, but it's brutal. You know, if you are working with the wrong types of carriers, there's a lot of problems, a lot of lawsuits, and
oh my God, I can imagine.
Yeah. So like we definitely went through learning lessons. It wasn't just like rainbows and blowjobs all day, every day. It was
sure.
not like that. Like, not even like a single day for 2 years.
Yeah.
Like, didn't have one of those days, not once, for 2 years straight. And it definitely was
I
tough.
I can tell
so,
he's passionate about it, though.
Yeah.
I love that.
If
he's
you
like, you hear,
yes,
you hear him talking about it and opening up. I'm like, okay, he found his passion.
And moving is very sensitive for people. So please take in mind any negative reviews that you may see. There are Karens in the world, and there are people that do get upset for, you know,
legitimate
items that might have been broken. It happens. You know,
yeah,
there are instances. It's a very sensitive industry to be in the two industries I work in. They just happen to both make a lot of money.
Good for you.
Kayla, question for you.
Oh, God.
Do you think it's the obsessive compulsivity of addiction and alcoholism? And where I'm going with this
is... Oh, I know
is,
where you're... Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Dude, you have so many fucking things going on at once.
Mm-hmm.
It seems
oh, yeah.
like you have...
No, I talked to you about this when we
first
started talking, and I was like, oh, dude, I think that you just, like, traded one addiction for another. Like, you
yeah,
became
for sure.
a workaholic.
Dude, I had, like, and I was drop shipping at one point. I'm painting, you know, on another...
Oh, yeah, that's right. He's like, I can fucking do that.
I can sell these. I can sell them for, like, $10,000 a pop.
Oh, you're so funny.
Typical addict.
Yeah, exactly.
I started one, did 80% of it. You know, bought the best paintbrushes, everything, but didn't even finish.
Yeah, I'm very much so like that. I like throwing money at the wall sometimes and seeing if it sticks or not.
Yeah.
You know, so I
do too.
Yeah, it's definitely
I have the same
great
problem.
But I totally traded addiction for another addiction with
yeah,
this
man.
One. Yeah,
I mean, yeah,
taken over my life.
Yeah.
So what are you gonna do to fix that?
I've already started it. I've been leaving work a little bit earlier, so some days I'll actually leave at like 4:30 or 5:30.
You
know,
the awareness.
I don't
the
come awareness. In until 10 o'clock every
Structure.
Day now.
Yeah,
you know, so I do allow myself to get outside of the world. But
what do you do for fun?
Oh,
what brings you joy?
I love playing pickleball now. Again, I was a big volleyball player.
I love pickleball.
Are you good?
I'm a fucking beast.
No way.
I'm literally an Olympic athlete. Like, what do you think?
Oh, that's pretty true. But you're going to have to come out and see if you can play.
All right, dad bods, bring it on.
Whoa.
I'll play you both at the same time.
Don't make me bring some heavy hitters with me. I know some fit people. I know some people at a gym.
No, I'm kidding. You guys look great.
Yeah.
You look great.
Thank you.
I'm actually not that good, but I do love to play.
It's so much fun.
I'm an amazing shit talker. That's my skill set.
Yeah, great for sports.
Dude, I went to her house with all her friends from the gym. Like yeah. Coach, other fighters.
My coaches, my friend. Yeah, my
it
crew.
Was Friendsgiving.
Friendsgiving.
Dude, we're playing, what was the dice game called?
Liar's Dice.
Liar's
You'd
Dice.
You'd probably be no, good
no,
at
I
it.
Thought
You'd
I
be
was
good at it.
Do you need to get away with a lie?
Yeah.
Oh, you guys are done. It's not even a game for me.
Find
I already
out
won.
Next Friendsgiving.
Okay,
we'll
cool.
We'll see, son, because by the way.
Alec, you're invited.
Okay, awesome.
Ask
Guy
Kevin,
in the corner, you're
Kevin.
Invited. No, I'm just kidding.
Hey, Phil.
No, we're definitely, you're invited. Ask Kevin who won.
She
Did
won.
You win? Well, I got knocked
yes,
out.
I won?
I got knocked out first.
Why do I feel like that it was Kevin's 4-year-old that won?
No, I'm joking.
You won?
I'm a beast.
I was actually the first one knocked out by her mom.
Dude, I had to leave. My mom who suffered from a stroke.
She was like, yo, I'm going to like knock you out. To me, I'm like,
the mom said that to you?
Yeah,
oh, God.
She's like, but she was joking, obviously.
Yeah, of course.
But like very competitive.
You felt very attacked, though.
She's wonderful.
Yeah.
An amazing lady. They're just so competitive.
Love it.
A little bit psychotic. You find your people.
Yeah.
And I had to, and they're all fighters. Like, everyone has a cauliflower ear in there except for me. So I'm like, all right, I can't, like, really talk shit.
Yeah.
You're the
black sheep of the family.
Yeah. I'm like the wimp in the room.
He was like the corporate
boy.
America. Yeah.
Yeah.
Like,
pretty boy.
Yeah.
There you go.
None of us have ever had a real job. Yeah. We're all like dregs of society.
Living in Parkland on the
I
most
always,
expensive street now.
Growing up, I always wished that I had a family like that because like I'm the only one in my family, like within like my brother and my parents,
mm-hmm.
that is like any sense really athletic,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
you know, or will go hunting or anything
mm-hmm,
like that.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, growing up, I was always like, why am I the weird one in my family?
Right.
Why won't anyone do that? But, like, now...
What
like,
made you like that stuff? Do you know?
No idea.
Just,
like, I'm the only one in my family that does it.
Huh.
So weird.
That's cool.
And I grew up in Long Island. There's, like, a lot of just rich white people that don't exactly do hunting things like that.
You like
that.
To hunt?
Yeah, I like
what
hunting.
What do you hunt?
Couple like a month and a half ago, I just did some wild boar up in Okeechobee.
Shut the fuck up, really,
yeah.
Dude. That I want to go so bad.
So
one
much
of my
fun.
Buddies just went to Okeechobee. And
200
he was like,
bucks. Yeah, cool. A lot of fun. Anytime
dude,
you want to go.
I want a bow,
yeah.
though. I want to do it with a crossbow.
You could go with a bow, spear, shotgun, rifle, pistol, anything.
Yeah,
they
dude.
Let you go loose there. You could
right,
bring any of
buddies.
Your own weapons too.
First,
yeah.
we'll play pickleball.
Then
we'll
step
go boar
up
hunting.
To the next level.
Okay,
exactly.
Jeez, what are you sitting like a little like? Hut?
Oh no! It's like this buggy that's like 6 feet tall that you're just
is
like
it a luxury buggy.
You're like,
nothing
you're...
luxury about it.
Because then I don't want to go. Yeah,
exactly.
Now,
if you're a prima donna, you should not be coming.
I'm like, can I wear my Gucci's?
Yeah.
Or...
You're getting dirty. Yeah. You're getting blood on you.
I would love to take Kevin camping.
Yeah.
I crush camping. I could start a massive fire too.
I thought
I'm
you were going to say
woman.
That you would cry.
That's my jam. I built for my birthday this year. I built a fire pit at my house.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah.
Like with the stones and everything.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, that's pretty cool.
Yeah, me and my buddy Michelle.
I need to push myself to do more missions like that.
Your
it's
house is like
fun.
A giant human playground.
No, it really is. Like, I'm not going to lie to you. Sometimes I look around and I'm like, dude, if I was a kid, I would never
leave.
I mean, I never want to leave now, and I'm
yeah.
an adult. So
it's
as
like
a kid,
a
I'd be like, no, I'm not
That's
going.
That's how I feel
I'm
where
not
I'm
going.
Living
you
right
come
now.
Over
I got
here,
it all.
Susie.
Dude,
you know?
It's like an adult's playground at my house.
Oh,
it's great.
Cool.
Yeah.
So, what else? So, pickleball, boar hunting,
oh, yeah,
fishing.
Hunting. I love fishing. Addicted
yeah,
to fishing. Like,
yeah.
we'll go every 2 to 3 months.
That's good. So, you're going to spend more time this
yeah.
year doing things that
like
bring
2 weeks
joy.
Ago, I did fishing charter out of Fort Lauderdale. Caught
nice.
Myself, like, 2 decent-sized wahoo.
Nice.
Good stuff.
Nice.
Yeah.
Okay,
that's
boy.
Awesome.
Okay.
Oh, yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah, a lot of fun.
So,
yeah, honestly, that's what I keep busy with is just like outdoor activities, big into it. I found like a bunch of nature spots around me as well.
Do you feel better when you're out? See, because when Kevin and I talked to each other, I said, okay, there are 4 things I do every day, right? Like I pray, I meditate, I spend time outside,
Yeah.
And I journal. Like, there, whatever. There are a couple things that I do. But when I don't go outside.
Depression.
Ugh.
Yeah.
I feel worse.
And that's the issue with me in Florida. I'm so sick of the summers. I need the sun, but it is just too hot outside for me.
Oh, see, no, I love it.
The cold. Like, my really? House, all year round, my house is set on, not auto, but 65 degrees.
Holy
like,
shit.
Any girl that I have,
holy
yeah,
shit.
Any girl that I have come over that I'm, like, trying to, like, date or whatever
I
it
don't
is,
go below
you know,
70.
Everyone's like, why is your house so fucking cold? And I'm like, I don't know. I'm just a psycho, I guess. You could leave now. Like,
do you at
I
least
get
let
it.
Him take
deal
the
breaker.
Home?
And then I have another AC unit that was installed in my bedroom that I keep at 63 degrees.
Oh,
I'm like a maniac for the cold. I love the cold.
Do Jesus. You like have a blanket?
Yeah, I sleep with a blanket and a sheet.
Poor girls, man.
Yeah.
Jesus.
He's
yeah,
like,
I know.
Nah, now you gotta cuddle me.
Exactly, exactly. She knows what I'm thinking.
And he
that
has
manipulation
no...
still coming
yeah,
into
exactly.
play.
Oh, my
no,
God.
No, that's great. That's great.
Yeah.
Well, dude.
Yeah.
I want to thank you.
Yeah,
thank
you.
Yeah
no, thank you guys.
You
thank
are,
you.
You're the shit, man.
Totally. Like,
I appreciate that. You're a role model, you know, just the power of example. And
thank you.
I really do appreciate you coming on here and sharing your story.
Yes, thank you for your vulnerability.
Yeah.
Yeah, that is cool. Like that, doing that and you know, just passing it along to help the next person is where it's at. And
yeah. That's what people did for me. I owe it. I'm in debt to the world. So,
yeah. If this episode helps one, or if the podcast just helps one person, we've accomplished
what
we
wanted. Then it's worth it.
You've successfully won, exactly.
One last thing, too. Let's give the lady her flowers. She just signed with the UFC and has a
freaking lations. Oh my God. Why didn't we start with that?
A massive shout.
Where's the belt now? Can someone get this thing for me?
It's coming.
I know it.
And Kayla is fighting. Holly Holm?
It's announced.
There you go.
Good.
Yeah.
Cool.
In April.
Yep. April 13th, UFC 300.
So proud of you.
Aw, thanks.
And give the lady her flowers.
Aw, thanks, guys. No, I honestly, yeah. This isn't about me. Like, we do this to help other people, but my hope and my goal is that with a platform like that, we're able to help, you know, even more people and have even more awareness. And by you sharing your story tonight, by you being vulnerable and opening up and letting people know that it's okay to not be okay. And guess what? Like, there is hope at the end of the tunnel. There is a light at the end of the tunnel. Like, that's what it's all about, and I'm so grateful to you for that tonight, so thank you.
Thank you both so much. You've got no idea how much this means to me at the end of the day.
Of course, man.
Like I said, just helping another person.
Thank you.
Selfishly helps myself, so I am now successfully happier this evening.
I love it. That's it.
Awesome.
Yeah, thank you, guys.
All right, guys.